A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 157. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Cold Lazarus. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are really talking about two linked four-part dramas here, so 8 60-minute episodes all told. Written by one of the greats of British TV writing, Dennis Potter. The first of these was Karaoke, which is really not a science fiction program. But then the second one, which we'll focus on a little bit more, is Cold Lazarus. And it was very much a science fiction story.
Yes, that's right. Quite an interesting and unusual show, because it was a co-production between the BBC and Channel 4, which at the time, back in 1996, was quite unusual. And as you say, Dennis Potter, one of the famous names from British television writing. We'll talk about him a little bit as we go on as to why he was so well regarded and how this came to be his last ever television productions. And as you say, Brian, we've got these two linked shows, Karaoke, not really science fiction, but sets up what we're going to talk about in Cold Lazarus.
That's right.
So, starting with the setup, as we say, Cold Lazarus has the science fiction elements, but we'll sort of dot backwards first to look at the first one, I think, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. There are arguably some elements of a little bit of science fiction in Karaoke, but it really is much more of a character drama. And it's based around this writer, Daniel Field, who is working on the film that his latest script has been written, and it's being put into production, and they're making this film. And as he walks around out in the city and so on, he hears people in real life speaking lines from his screenplay, and he has this, you know, bizarre sense that he is hearing his own play out around him. And it's like a meeting of his own characters and his own creation and them somehow coming to life and intermixing with reality, which is a bit of a typical mix of things for Dennis Potter, of having reality and imagination or fantasy world sort of mixed together a little bit.
Yes, I think if you're familiar with any of Dennis Potter's television work, you'll recognize this bit of or this idea of fantasy bleeding over into reality, and a sort of blurring of the lines between the two. So yes, Dennis Potter stuff, and as we say, one of the sort of interesting characters in British television history. So let's get to our characters. We'll start with Karaoke, because that comes first, obviously. And as you say, Brian, we've got this writer, Daniel Field, played by Albert Finney. And one of the things you'll notice as we go along is that we've got quite a stellar cast here, haven't we, Brian?
Absolutely. A very impressive cast.
So he's the writer working on this film. But as you say, his life is unraveling around him and things seem to be going very strangely wrong. His agent, Ben Baglin, played by the British comedy actor Roy Hudd, is trying to look after Daniel, trying to protect him, trying to manage his interests. He injects a certain amount of comedy because his character has a speech defect. He has a characteristic sort of spoonerism, reversing the first letters of words, which is played out for comic effect. But he's really very concerned about Daniel and trying to look after him.
Yes, that's right. And then you have Nick Nick Bomber, played by Richard E. Grant, who is the film director who is trying to change around Daniel's script and sort of meddle with it and put his own stamp and his own way of doing things on it, which of course Daniel is upset about, and there is tension that develops there. And he is also trying to maintain and keep his relationship with his rather rich and aristocratic wife, who is played by Julie Christie.
Yeah, Julie Christie. I mean, of course, we remember her from Abe from Andromeda right at the start of her career. And yet here she is popping up in a fairly minor role, but amazing to have such an actress here, Brian.
Yes, someone who's had a film career spanning decades and is really, really very good and quite a big name, along with people like Richard E. Grant, of course. Sandra Solers, played by Saffron Burroughs, was a young woman working as an escort, basically, in a karaoke club. And her life seems to mirror and reflect elements of Daniel's script. And you have sort of odd things coming in with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got, in a way, it's almost become slightly confusing because Sandra, as you say, played by Saffron Burroughs, but there's also an actress within the film within a film, and there's another version of her that crops up as well, and all this stuff is bleeding over from fantasy into reality, and causing quite a lot of concern for Daniel. And also, we've got what you may again recognise from Dennis Potter. We've got the very attractive younger woman who's almost a muse for the older man, the older writer. We could say that often with Dennis Potter scripts, he did have very attractive young women fall in for men with problems similar to the ones he experienced himself. But we'll talk about that a bit later on as well.
Yes, well, that may be. And yeah, the alternate version inside the film of sort of the similar character was played by Keeley Hawes quite early in her career. And of course, she went on to do all sorts of things in the series Spooks and in many other shows. And Saffron Burroughs herself went on to this rather big film career with films like Troy and The Bank Job and Deep Blue Sea, and she was in the series Law and Order Criminal Intent, and she was in Boston Legal. So you have, in the case of the women there, these actresses who are, you know, sort of very early in their career and went on to do, you know, a lot of quite big things. And then a number of others, actors who had already done a lot of big roles and were very well known.
Okay. We will mention one other actor and character from Karaoke, partly because he's familiar to us for his work on Neverwhere, and that's Hal Bennett, who is playing the owner of the karaoke club where Saffron Burroughs' character works. And his name in the script is Arthur Malian, but he's known rather wittily, I suppose, as Pig Malian. And interestingly, the character in Daniel's script has got the same name. And then here is this character, apparently in real life, very, very similar. And this causes great confusion for Daniel when he sort of stumbles into this club.
Yeah, so you do get these, you know, slightly sci-fi related ideas of, you know, sort of fiction somehow parallel to reality and things that had been written or perhaps somehow happening and these sorts of things. Of course, we also saw Howell Bennett when we covered Artemis 81 quite some time ago.
Oh, right. Yes, he was very young then, wasn't he?
Yes, not one of his best known performances, rather obscure, but he's definitely done some very good performances in a variety of shows.
Yes, this is the older, sleazier version that we're dealing with here.
Yes, absolutely. So in Karaoke, when we first meet Daniel, he is in the hospital having tests for stomach pains, and it's sort of made to be, you know, quite embarrassing and sort of dehumanizing for him. And as things progress, in the story, his health is gradually deteriorating.
That's right. He's getting poorly. His life appears to be going strangely wrong. And events from his screenplay continue to sort of splash over into his real life. As he investigates this young woman, Sandra, and meets her family, particularly he meets her mother, who is played by Alison Steadman, another sort of high-powered actress in a fairly small role, but again, doing very good work here. And he starts to find out a bit more about her life, but at the same time, he's struggling with his own one, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. It's sort of a downward spiral for him in terms of his health and perhaps his sanity and how he is doing in life and relating to things. And it's very much not shown as a self-destructive kind of thing, but definitely, you know, things are escaping him and he is moving downwards for the most part throughout this story, and very much dealing with his own mortality. And you can see, you definitely have elements of the situation that he's in being a little similar to the situation that the writer Dennis Potter was in himself. You also have these ideas of Daniel reading about and researching cyberspace, and in particular cryogenics. And he's looking at this for his one last script he wants to write is going to be about cyberspace and cryogenics. And there are questions, you know, maybe he wants to explore cryogenics somehow for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, here we get the setup for the science fiction elements, and in particular, obviously, the setup for Cold Lazarus, which we're going to move on and talk about now. And this idea that Daniel Field is going to write this script about the future and about cryogenics, if he has time, if his own diagnosis will allow him. And we do get this scene with him and his hospital consultant where they discuss the issue of how long he might have. So karaoke wraps up. It sort of wraps up the story. It does leave a few sort of ideas and questions hanging. But then we move on to the next four-parter, which is Cold Lazarus itself.
Yes, it really is a different story. And as you say, karaoke is sort of wrapped up and self-contained, but it leads into, almost as a sort of spin-off, it leads into Cold Lazarus.
Okay, so let's finally get to the science fiction show. Let's jump forward to a 24th century Britain, and we've got another sort of dystopia to deal with. So we've got, in particular, violence and riots on the streets, and this idea that going outdoors is very unsafe, and that people with sort of money and privilege don't do it very much, Brian.
Yes, that's right. And we certainly get into these ideas of class differences, and the privileged scientists are led by Professor Porlock, played by Francis de la Tour, and also Glazunov, played by Kieran Hines. And they are looking at, starting to examine, the memories of Daniel Field, who of course was the main character in Karaoke, the previous drama. And what we get is something where they somehow have Daniel Field's head. It's been preserved because of these cryogenic type things. Not the rest of his body, but just a frozen head connected to a variety of pipes, and there's caked makeup involved, and you have this head connected to all of this machinery for examining the memories and what is in his brain and his mind.
Okay, and we sort of got the clue that this was going to happen at the end of Karaoke, and here it has happened. As you say, there's Albert Finney, apparently his head suspended in some sort of tank, frozen, and this team of scientists starting to tap into his memories. And so we'll get them showing these memories up on screen, and we get to watch them with him, or with the team. And it's things like we'll see Daniel's childhood, and we'll see bits and pieces that we may have already seen versions of in Karaoke, but we'll also see other episodes. And it's sort of, you know, interesting stuff. They're looking at it. They're trying to understand how to examine his memories and what these memories mean.
Yes, and they're really looking at these memories because they're from this bygone era, from the 20th century. And his just happened to be the one viable brain that they could use to look at this. And they're looking at a very different world from their own, but also looking at the people and the events that we already know from the previous drama as Daniel Field. So we see, in some cases, actual clips from karaoke, and in other cases, we see what at first appear to be clips from karaoke, but they're actually slightly different versions. Maybe he didn't remember it quite the same way, or he had a bit of a daydream of something that varied. So we get some things we've already seen, but some things that are not quite the same as what we've seen.
So we have this science team in their lab doing this work, but of course we've got lots of other stuff going on sort of outside the laboratory, lots of background tensions. We learn that there may be a mole in the science team which may somehow threaten the project, but there's lots of other interests involved as well, Brian.
Yes, we have Siltz, played by Henry Goodman, who is the chief executive of a giant corporation in the US that is taking an interest in this project and may be able to take it over or use it for different things, try to market those memories for entertainment purposes and so on and so forth. And he's actually acting for Martina Madsen, played by Diane Lane, who is like a super rich owner of this company. So we have the ideas of the big American corporations sort of swooping in and taking things over.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got big corporations. We've got a privileged class living mostly indoors. We've got lots of stuff being, I suppose, dominated by television and virtual reality and that sort of entertainment. And then outside on the streets, we've got disorder and some form of terrorist organization as well, which we'll learn more about as the show goes on.
Yes, absolutely. It is very much about showing some of those kinds of differences.
Hey. Miranda.
A host of past memories, past inventions, whole distortions, odd fragments out of place in our past, like we're suddenly back at school again, say. But the sleeper, the dreamer, is not usually aware that he or she is asleep.
There's no volition in it, is there? So in a sense, no identity. I mean,
yes! Oh, this Daniel Field, this man from all those centuries ago, is not any more aware that he has a partly functioning brain than a dreamer is that he is asleep.
And another thing, if I may dare to intrude, Professor Paul.
Don't be so silly.
When we saw Daniel Field in the tunnel-like world, the man saw himself in the scene, as when he was a small child, scared of that silly little song.
Do we see ourselves as objects?
So we should get into our production notes here.
Okay, and we have to start, of course, with Dennis Potter, one of the giants of British television writing, as we've said. Born 1935, died 1994, which is 2 years before this production. Started his career in the 1960s, writing for a series which was called The Wednesday Plays. So he had some early success there.
And that was quite a big post for a writer to be working on the Wednesday night plays. They were considered quite prestigious at the time. He went on to write some controversial and quite successful serials in the 1970s, including Casanova in 1971 and Brimstone and Treacle in 1976.
And from there on to one of his famous, particularly famous shows, Pennies from Heaven, 1978 with Bob Hoskins, where I think he first introduced the idea of actors miming to the lyrics of old songs, something that we see in karaoke. He uses that device again. And of course, both you may recognise the names. Brimstone and Treacle was made into a feature film with Sting, and Pennies from Heaven was adapted in an American film with Steve Martin.
So you can see when multiple television serials are being adapted as big films, that this writer was definitely looked on, you know, as someone who was a big deal for these types of dramas. Blue Remembered Hills in 1979 was another thing that he wrote, which had adult actors playing children in it.
Yeah, an interesting show, that one. As you say, we've got this sort of strange idea of these adults playing child versions of themselves. Another interesting show, another controversial show. And then we sort of build up to 1986 and probably his most famous television program, The Singing Detective, which featured Michael Gambon as a hospital-bound psoriasis sufferer who escapes into a fantasy life as the singing detective of the title. And, of course, Dennis Potter had his own experiences with psoriasis and with the arthritis that goes with it. So a lot of the hospital stuff and a lot of the embarrassing stuff that he goes through in hospital was based on Potter's own experiences. Something, again, that we see when we get to karaoke.
Yes, we very much get things of that nature, where the situation that Potter was in at the time. In 1994, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer of the pancreas, and that did not take very long. He died not long after that.
Yeah, that's right. And shortly before he died, he gave what became a very famous television interview with the well-known television journalist and presenter Melvyn Bragg. And Dennis Potter was really quite, you know, he was a big thing on British television at the time. He was very controversial. He was very well known. And so he gave this interview when he knew he was dying, when he talked about his diagnosis. And in particular, he talked about these two shows that he had written, or the fact that he was writing at the time, and his hope that he would finish them in time, very much like the dilemma that Daniel Field is experiencing in karaoke. And it was during that interview that he expressed this interesting idea that he hoped that they would be co-produced by the BBC and by Channel 4. And as we were talking about before we came on air, Brian, it was quite unusual in the 90s for British television companies to work together.
Yeah, the networks were really quite separate at the time, and very often a big staff writer would really be allied with one, and it was a big deal if he or she moved to a different network.
Yes, and of course now we see the different networks working together and putting out releases on their own DVD lines from another company and so on. So maybe in some ways, you know, Dennis Potter saw what was coming or helped nudge that along. But anyway, there's this interesting idea. As you say, Brian, sadly he died not too long after that, in May 1994, but the production went ahead.
Yes, and he did complete those two scripts. The BBC and Channel 4 did go ahead with doing this co-production of Karaoke and Cold Lazarus. Rennie Rye directed both of those series.
And as we've said, they've got this very big name cast. I think probably by this time, Dennis Potter was so famous on British television that big name actors were more or less queuing up to be in this show. So really, you know, lots of famous people. You've mentioned Richard E. Grant. We've talked about Julie Christie. And of course, Albert Finney himself, who's in both shows. So big cast.
Yes, these were, in some cases, people who were, you know, who really had film careers and were doing film work and theater work. Sort of stepping aside from that to do some television work for this, you know, the final run of Dennis Potter dramas.
Okay. Obviously, we've got lots of studio work, but we do have some outside recording, and in particular, outside recording in the Forest of Dean in Gloucestershire, where Potter had grown up himself, which had been used as the setting for that Blue Remembered Hills show we talked about briefly. So some nice outdoor stuff, and there it is. This is the production.
Yes. Karaoke was broadcast in April 1996, first broadcast on the BBC, and then each each episode would broadcast on Channel 4 the following night. And then for Cold Lazarus, later in 1996, they reversed the process and Channel 4 would broadcast each episode, which was then rebroadcast on BBC One.
Interesting way of doing it, but I suppose the logical one for two television companies working together for the first time, I guess, Brian.
Yes, this, as we said, was sort of the beginning of that type of thing that the television networks in the UK could actually work together on these sorts of things.
Okay, that brings us to the availability. Because we've got two TV companies in the 90s, the sort of rights issues meant that it's never been repeated, as far as I know, on British television, either of these two shows. But we do have a Region 2 DVD release. They both came out separately, but then they were put together in a box set by the company Acorn DVD. You can still pick them up separately on Amazon for about £14 each, or you can get the box set, which we've been looking at, which was £25. Again, I think the rights issues mean that we don't get anything in the way of issues. We just have the 8 episodes of these two shows. Strangely enough, we don't have that Dennis Potter and Melvyn Bragg interview, which might have been an interesting extra.
Yes, we get a few little bits of text on there, but that's about it. Really no extras on that set. In Region 1, there is no release. It's available as an import, I believe, on Amazon.com for about $28 for each series.
Okay. But interestingly, and perhaps I think for the first time on British Invaders, you can watch, here in the UK at least, both of these shows for free. All you have to do is sign up on the Channel 4 4OD website, their on-demand TV show, and you'll find both these shows, Karaoke and Cold Lazarus, hidden away there in the back catalogue if you search for them. So at the moment, you can watch the whole thing, if we've piqued your interest, here in the UK for free.
Yes, I think that is for UK residents only. I tried it, and I know it's not available in Canada, but certainly if you're in the UK, that's a nice way to check it out.
Yeah, please do. And if you get the chance, and you do so, let us know about it on Facebook. And if you're in another region, it'd be interesting to go to the Channel 4 site and let us know whether or not it's accessible, for instance, in Australia, which you thought perhaps it might be, Brian.
Well, I don't know. It could be.
Yeah, be interesting to let us know if anybody out there is listening.
Yes, and if you do go take a look, I would say definitely watch Karaoke first and then go on to Cold Lazarus. It's definitely worth watching both of them in order.
Yes, they're very closely linked, really, aren't they?
So next time, we will get to the science fiction part of the show, look at Cold Lazarus in a little more detail.
We'll talk a little bit about some other shows that this reminded us of, and we'll talk about Dennis Potter's legacy and whether perhaps this is his best legacy or whether it's one of the other shows we've mentioned. So some stuff to get to.
And of course, we'll get to some of our own reviews and views and recommendations. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, you can find us there. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find that as well.
And as ever, please do join us there and let us know what you think about these shows. We're also proud members of the Voice of Geeks Network, which is a streaming internet radio where our episodes go out on a Monday and a Tuesday night. And if you've joined us through VogNet, welcome aboard.
That's vognetwork.com. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon in England also signing off.